another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Steve Montgomery, author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline on Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. Steve, it's good to be back, and I'm really excited for this one. I don't know if you consider this the climax of the past few that we've done, but this episode is diving into the weaponization of mysticism. And that theme fascinates me because I'm talking very much about the weaponization of Christianity in general and some of the politics and some of the different themes that I've talked about. Now we're starting to talk about from other countries towards the United States. So this gets really, really interesting really quick. So very excited to get into this with you.
Yeah, great, John. Likewise here. The whole premise I have in my larger book about converging apostasy is, of course, just like it says, and since I've identified basically 10 themes where it's like repeated offenses, you know, they keep repeating these ideas from early on, like Valentinus in second century on up to present. And so I've mostly dealt with the three that we've talked about, which would be some form of perfectionism or elitism, leading to some form of dominionism, which I know a lot of our listeners understand that, gets into the political realm, and then actually some different stances and different ways to approach the idea of a sacred purge, so feeling the right to be able to do that, weed out the no good guys, and we'll take a hold of the earth and run it the way we want it to. So this is going to be a big jump, but if you bear with it and follow what I'm up to, you'll see some of the ideological imprints on the Nazi Party, on Hitler, actually are still out there, and they haven't been eradicated yet, but they still have a little bit of an influence, sometimes a big influence on the identity movement. So you get these groups and individuals where it might be Wesley Swift, who you know quite a bit about him, John, / Manifest Sons of God, / a New Age in some cases, where there's a big mismatch of different concepts that flow around. And through that mismatch, which I identified the main reason that even happens is through ongoing revelation, which I've harped on quite a bit in the past. So in my book, talking about 10 different themes, what kind of loosens things up and applies to grease to the wheels is this concept of ongoing revelation. So you can start with the latter rain brother or sister, and they decide, oh, there's something better over the hill. The green is grass, the grass is green, or whatever you want to say, as they proceed. And then before you know it, it's sort of a contest to see who can come up with the most outlandish versions of scriptural truth, and a lot of times even hop over that and get around it to where it's not scriptural whatsoever. So I'll let the audience know that the sources I used for this kind of idea of today, and oh, and by the way, a title I came up with for what we're doing today is From Savatri Devi to the Devil to the Nar. And so, no, I'm not saying that she had a conference with the Nar people and said, okay, look, you got to teach this and this and this, and we'll all be in the same camp. And there's not a direct hard, fast connection between the Nar and this woman, Devi. But you'll see that through several different movements, for example, Christian identity, there's a thread here, a thread there, that some people want to take that big jump over into Devi and what she's up to. Okay, so I'll get into who she is, but first off, I'll let you here are the three sources that are primarily used for this podcast. Okay, so this is by a scholar, and I think we might have briefly mentioned it before. What he writes about, if you weren't up to snuff and knew, you know, what he does, he's truly a scholar, and you have to really put doctor in front of his name, Dr. Nicholas Goodrich-Clark. So he was very fascinated with the Third Reich, and what he wrote is highly scholarly, but the title sometimes can make you think, oh boy, here's another conspiracy theorist or something. So the three books that I read, one was called The Black Sun. Another was called The Occult Roots of Nazism, which, yes, many sensationalistic kind of writings and movies have been based on that idea. And then another one was called Hitler's Priestess. Okay, that's the focus of today. Savitri Devi and Nicholas Goodrich Clark's opinion functioned as something like a priestess to spreading the many dangerous and blasphemous ideas about Hitler and the relation to the Jews. So in just in general comments about this, I would say that any connective tissue of similar teachings and shared sources is what allows for teachings on anti-Semitism and the devil, or the devil reborn, as I put it, to exist in seed form from which they may develop, grow, and cross-pollinate. And I know you've used that word also, John. It's quite true that these movements will take a little bit from this side, a little bit from this, and before you know it, you get this horrible, horrible combination. So I put that this mix and match kind of idea occurs on a continuum from just a little bit. And sometimes you don't even know what the source is, where it came from, to somewhat. There may be a little bit of understanding of where all these ideas come from, and to the all out, where they understand, you know, entirely where the idea came from, and they just happen to be advocates for it. And all three of these are truly examples of divide and conquer. Because if you're talking about the Christian faith and you introduce, you know, like Jesus said, a little leaven leavens the whole batch. You introduce a little bit of this, then you got major problems. And this is something we were discussing right before you pushed record today, John, is the idea of introducing and reconciling all opposites. That in its basic seed form is very, very prevalent in the occult world and all the way down to Satanists, because they say that light and dark will be reconciled. Christ and the devil will be reconciled. And they're just going out with this kind of opposites connecting. So I'd let it be kind of a warning to someone if they're seeing a teacher, spiritual teacher of some sort, talking about connecting and resolving all opposites. Well, they may not all out be saying that we worship the devil, but they certainly have the principle in place. Here's an example. Not that he's somebody you want to read about and then have a pleasant night's sleep. That's Charles Manson. He actually said, if you look, not what he did, what he encouraged others to do, but quotes from him come down to the same thing. It's God and the devil. And he said that he just happened to manifest this more than some others who never took action on it like he did. And then, of course, you get to Western esotericism under the influence of Valentinus, the Gnostic, has actually set precedents that were handed down through time for anti-Semitic thought and the devil reborn. And where did they go? To this great source of all no good stuff, and that is Helena Blavatsky and also Savitri Devi. And even to a lesser extent, to Jane Lead and those she influenced through the Latter Rain movement and the Manifest Sons of God ministries. So if you take that idea and you say, what are four of the most prominent concepts that will lead to the devil reborn, and you can find this in Christianity or elsewhere, is to attack God's people, the Jews. That's already inherently a step forward to embracing the devil, because you're commending those who want to do harm to the chosen Jews. Another one is what I mentioned, a universal reconciliation. This often leads to a whitewashed devil reborn. Three, the process of ongoing relation, as encouraged by Jane Lead and those in the Latter Rain and the NAR. This leads away from the gospel once delivered to other gospels. And again, it doesn't mean they fully embraced them yet, but they're sort of on the precipice of being more vulnerable towards falling on over to one of those camps and just saying, oh, the Lord told me we got this new revelation, etc. And then four, something we hear quite often in the NAR, and you would hear this from various manifest sons of God teachers, is that there will be a billion soul harvest to usher in the kingdom, and this harvest of souls will happen before Christ is allowed to return. Well, this happens to line up with the timeline of those who are basically saying that they will receive some sort of an imposter leader, a new Christ, and these ideas would converge. Now, when I was making my notes for this, I kind of forgot why I said this, but I don't want to spend too much time on it, but just to toss out something that Jesus said, and maybe one of the listeners can see how it fits what we're talking about better. In Matthew 6:24, Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other." Okay, so we heard it straight from him, and it probably has a lot of different ways that could be interpreted. Okay, so just a quick introduction to Savitri Devi. She was born Maximiani Portas. She lived from 1905 to 1982. In honor of Savitri, who's closely related to the Hindu god Sura, she changed her name to Savitri Devi. But Devi was no dummy. Sorry, I'm starting to get to my language arts remembrance of fifth graders. Devi was no dummy, but she was deceived and deceiving of others. For example, she earned two master degrees, one in philosophy, one in science, and she received a PhD degree in chemistry. She promoted a mix, here's an idea again of a convergence, a mix of Hinduism and Nazism. And she became one of the leading members of the neo-Nazi underground during the 1960s. This was strange when I read this, but go figure. Just like Hitler, she was a vegetarian. And like Hitler, she loved dogs. And she actually preferred animals to humans. She said that people who do not, quote, respect nature animals should be executed. Okay. So she's got a quick trigger finger there. Maybe due to this love for animals, she liked to sing the worst weasel song, which I'm sorry, it's not really a laughing matter, but sort of it is. Okay, so in 1929, a German soldier named Horst Weasel was shot and killed by Russian armed militia people. And the lyrics of the song go like so. This is a part of it. Millions of people are looking at the swastika full of hope. The day for freedom and bread is dawning. Won't go into it now, but the idea of freedom and bread and connecting that to something like the swastika, there's a lot of interesting implications. This is also odd, but can't wait to hear what you have to say about it, John. In 1970, Devi spent 9 months at the home of her friend, Francois, I think I'm getting it close, that's French, Dior. And Dior was the niece of the French fashion designer, Christian Dior. But Davy's personal habits become very annoying. She didn't take baths during the 9 month stay, and she insisted on continually chewing garlic. After a while, the two friends could not put up with this anymore, so David moved out with a lot of cats and at least one cobra.
There's a few things that you mentioned in there that I want to highlight, a few things actually that I want to go deeper with, but one of them, you mentioned the phrase cross-pollination, which I've used quite often. A lot of people try to trace the roots of doctrine, and they find it difficult because there aren't linear trees that you can just follow to find where doctrine came from. It's this cross-pollination of ideas. And one of the things that happens whenever there is a cross-pollination, people start to come together around ideologies. And so as a doctrine supports another doctrine and like minds joined in together, then it gets to the point where it turns into a movement and the movement takes form. You mentioned the billion soul harvest, which interestingly, this just came up in a podcast that I was doing a couple of days back, but I was studying the timeline whenever Vice President Nixon, I think at that point in time, when he was addressing the Full Gospel businessmen during the National Prayer Breakfast, he was saying that communism is attacking us and we have a battle of the minds. We need you all to go out and fight this battle of the minds, which ended up to be, in many cases in these destructive cults, brainwashing. So you had those agendas were coming together, and those were political agendas mixed with religious agendas. So that cross-pollination began to happen. But where I'm headed with all of this is, as this happens, as these people come together on ideologies, it turns into a case where they want to conquer and they want to forcibly convert because of the political themes behind it. And what I find fascinating about all of this and your research, when you dive into the underlying themes of mysticism and how that works and how that propagates, there's this idea that Sophia will bring divine unity to everything. And so they want to convert to their mystic world. Well, the cults are fighting this. Whenever this ideology was spreading and William Branham was spearheading the revivals, he was saying they're trying to form a one-world religion, and we must fight this, brothers and sisters. I remember hearing this over and over and over. Well, I never really thought about the reverse of that. What they're attempting to do is they're trying to forcibly convert everybody to their one-world religion. It is both the same thing, right? And it wasn't long after Nixon's charge, I'd have to go back and see the dates, I want to say it was the next year, maybe, they started pushing that we're going to have a billion soul, they didn't use the word harvest, I think, billion soul revival, maybe. So they were pushing the same exact agenda. And when you look at the two competing forces, their intent was to create a one religion that conquered the other one.
Yeah, John, it's truly amazing, as always. And sort of that contrast that happens with both of us, I know, and with other people doing similar things, is there is a linear path to take. And so-and-so was sitting under the teachings of so-and-so. So, okay, well, that's where Sam Fife and Bill Britton got so much of the similar ideas. Britton was getting it straight from Jane Lead. At least a lot of his eschatology and his close connection with Sam Fife, well, they just kind of breathe the same rarefied air, whatever you want to call it. But Davy was definitely in on a lot of those kind of things, just from a slightly different angle and a different point in history, a different country. So here for the next part, I just put this as, again, excuses for the alliteration, Debbie's deviant dogma, because it was definitely, add another D word, it was definitely dogma, and it was definitely deviant. Okay, so she saw Hitler as the ninth avatar, meaning the ninth incarnation of the Hindu god Vishnu. Okay, so one of the concepts comes up with this quite a bit is that when you try to bring out the idea of an eschatology when it comes to esoteric folks, a lot of times, so oh no, they couldn't believe that because they just think, you know, after they die, they'll be reincarnated again. It just keeps going and going and going, recycling souls. And actually, Blavatsky and some of the other major writers, major thinkers, talked about, quote, the final incarnation. And although in the big picture, they might be thinking of a system, you know, they go through all the yugas, Kali Yuga and all the other ones that they have. The idea of this last culminating incarnation is what they thought Hitler was at that point. Of course, they had to rewrite things, but when they found, like, oh, he didn't quite make it. So here's another kind of deviant idea that Hitler made a, quote, sacrifice for humanity. Yes, disgusting. It sounds like Christ. To lead to the end of the Dark Age, aka the Kali Yuga, under the reign of the Jew. This would then usher in a golden age. So, yeah, you can see how that kind of runs parallel to prophecies we hear through the Nar and others, but with Devi's own touch to it. So speaking of touch, this is one of her major works, which has been influential in many aspects of what I think of as the converging apostasy. In her The Lightning and the Sun, she says that Hitler prophesied in 1928 of the New Order. He said of himself, I am not he, but while nobody else comes forward to prepare the way for him, I do so. Now, you know, people ascribe quotes to people that to say whatever, so I don't really know if that's something that can be verified. But it's quite interesting if it is true. Another thing Devi was really into from her embracing of Hindu ideas, she liked the caste system, where you had different levels of society, different forms of reincarnation as either a very low caste on up to the higher ruling caste. And if you look at Plato's writings, there's a little bit of that there too. And in a very general way, you can put this as something like submission to apostles and prophets, as we see this in the Nar. Very generally speaking, I'm it, you're almost it, you're not it, that kind of stuff. I know that we talked about this in another podcast, but what was known or is still known as Hindutva, which is a Hindu nationalist ideology that's led by India's prime minister, Narendra Modi, actually has some aspects to what we would say over here, MAGA. And so I'll let people take that and run with it as far as they want to. She also believed in quality control through eugenics. Another one that you might want to look it up if you don't know much about that. And so some people have described her as being a pessimistic pantheist. Yes, there's a unity of all life and all life is sacred, but she takes it into that kind of open door, if you will, into a reconciliation of all things. And so if you do that and say like her, dark and evil aspects will be united with this colossal view of the whole universe as divine, then you end up with some ideas that are very easy to take into the, whatever you want to say, like I've said, devil reborn.
You know, whenever I left the Branham cult and after I discovered that white supremacy was so closely tied to it, and then discovered Christian identity, my world was changed. But as I'm studying all of this and I go down these different pathways, one of the pathways that I found was eugenics, which you mentioned. And it's really hard to believe that this was even taught in schools in the United States. It's the idea, for anybody who doesn't know, it's the idea that you can improve the genetic quality of the human population by controlling the reproduction. And this was a widespread, this was a science. You go to science class and they would teach you this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the reason that I went down that rabbit trail is because there were actually ministers who, and revivalists who were trying to teach this as Christian science as well. And I don't mean Christian science like the cult. I mean, like, literally, this is the Christian way we should be. We should breed out the inbreds. And they use all kinds of derogatory terms to talk about this. But that was something that plagued the United States. To think of what Hitler did, and now you bring that into the aspect of all of this, he's doing much the same thing. And where it gets really, really scary is many of the mind control techniques that Hitler is using are being used by ministers in the United States to try to do the same agendas. Hitler just had more success with them. And I did the study on how Hitler was using the mind control on the people, the different techniques he used. And no, we can't say that we had concentration camps and all of this, but what I can say is ministers were enthralled with the idea that you could control somebody's mind enough to get them to believe your ideology. And good or bad, some of the men who were and women who were preaching this way, some of them probably did have good agendas, but think about the ones who did not have good agendas.
Yeah, that's right. And it reminds me of something that, you know, occasionally we'll have a comment where somebody says, you guys didn't really define that. And I can just say, sorry for past times, sorry for this one, sorry for the future, because there's such huge cans of worms. But as you're speaking about Christian identity, that just comes up right away is not only who did Debbie influence, but who influenced her. Okay, so who influenced her is not too hard to follow in some respects, because it's a blend of Gnosticism, Blavatsky's form of theosophy, and traditionalism. And that one gets confused quite often. So the quick, easy answer, but there's a lot more to it, is that it's sort of a Plato-based perennial wisdom that supposedly exists in all religions. And if you have the time to pursue it, you could go down the rabbit hole of Alice Bailey as being one that follows a lot of this stuff in the wrong way. Then that brings us to another individual who we know had somewhat influence on Hitler and the Nazis, and that's Friedrich Nietzsche. And Debbie said that she was markedly influenced by his Beyond Good and Evil, another work of his called The Will to Power, and another one called, oddly enough, The Antichrist. Now, there's another writing that really had an impact on her by Alfred Rosenberg, and it was called The Myth of the 20th Century. So this is a pseudoscientific book about divine blood and racial purity, and it won't take much thought to see how that worked with the Third Reich. Another one that's generally fits, but you can see how this one is acting itself out through Debbie and others, is social Darwinism. If you just Google that, you'll get a lot to learn about. And basically, it's the strong and the ruthless survive. Those who can't quite keep up don't survive. Another person who's quite interesting is and was praised by Steve Bannon without the long discussion. He was highly influential on Steve Miller. And that individual's name is Julius Evola. he was an occultist, and he was actually associated with fascist Italy and Nazi Germany.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
Okay, so those are a few of the folks that they had an impact on Davy, although there was quite a few more. And who did she influence is another interesting area to look at. Well, she provides a doctrinal connective tissue to reach deeper into the world of violent-prone Satanists, of all people, but at the same time to those in Christian identity, the right, and potentially to manifest Sons of God-based present truth ministries who are in the search of the next deep revelation. She also had an impact on some New Age feminists, on some UFO Nazi groups, and there's more of those than you'd imagine. And then on a person who, John, excuse me, I'm quite sure you know about this fellow, William Luther Pierce. And he is author of a racist book or two. The more popular ones were The Turner Diaries, and the other one is Hunter. And these inspired the Oklahoma bomber, in which quite a few people, I don't have it on the tip of my tongue, 130-some-odd perished, and then also the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, where you heard things like, hang so-and-so, hang so-and-so. Well, if you were to read these two books, you'd find out it says, the righteous will rise up and be poured upon Washington, D.C., where there will be many people hung who are not going with this proper way to see the world. Another person who's influenced by Davy is the omnicidal, that means kill them all, nuke them all, mystical fascist Alexander Dugin. Okay, Dugin is also interesting because he has such a big influence over Putin. So if you have Dugin influencing Putin, and then take that back to the step of Savitri influencing Dugin, you have this really soiled connection, which doesn't bring good to anything. So another thing that I found out about, which I hadn't read much about, but it makes sense, is deep ecology. And it has other names like deep green or the green movement. Not everybody involved in those movements is a fanatic and dangerous, but the ones that had anything to do with Savitri believe the world population must be reduced to more than 100 million. And she felt that this should be done at any means or by any means possible. So that means let the starving starve, let the diseased and old die, and allow for euthanization or to be forcibly removed for the sake of the planet. Another one, it sounds like you're talking about Charles Manson. People get these guys confused. But James Mason, who ran with all these type folks, his periodical called Siege helped to make Charles Manson a hero of neo-Nazi Satanists. So there he is, who crops up again. Is this saying that the NAR is teaching this? No, but it is saying that if you put Savitri in the middle and you have her reaching back to the Nazis, essentially, and then you have folks on the other end of the spectrum who have connections with, say, Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon and alt-right kind of folks. That, and also would go with that is the Turner Diaries and all the other things. Then what you have is an ideology in the middle, which is really, really out and out corrupt in one way, but potentially very corrupt and already corrupt, but it could get much worse on the other hand. Finally, you get to, in this group of people that she influenced, David Myatt. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, M-Y-A-T-T. I've heard him described as the most dangerous man on the planet. Interesting fellow, but he was a violent neo-Nazi. He was very impressed by Debbie's The Light and the Sun. There we go again with that one. He happened to call 9/11 attacks of terrorism. Okay, so he totally approved what they did. And then he became leader of the satanic group called the Order of Nine it's not angels. It's the Order of Nine Angles, which actually promotes human sacrifice and killing of Jews. So again, that thing of cross-pollination. You have a lot of different ideas mingling together. And then people that are in the latter rain, literally, who take several steps to where they get closer to this sort of stuff.
You know, and the radicalization is insidious. We did some podcasts recently about Vance Belter, who was the assassin who, Minnesota, you can look up the news. I won't go deep into that. But the idea was that he was radicalized by ministers who were working with, or I think he was even trained by people in Christ for the Nations Institute, which was led by Gordon Lindsay, who is William Branham's campaign manager, who was also a speaker in Christian Identity conferences. So I was getting questioned by different news journalists, was he radicalized by these people? And I think what you said is key. I could probably say yes. I don't know. There's no way to know unless I'm actually examining him. But radicalized to the point of an assassination, no, I wouldn't say that. However, once you have changed the ideology of a person and you've radicalized them, they are more susceptible to other radicalization. So it's not a pure black and white trail of history that you can find how he got radicalized. Now take this to the broader scale of what you're describing here. You've got mysticism, you've got politics, you've got the Russian agendas, you've got all kinds of different themes of ways in which you can radicalize people, each one of them just as destructive, the combination of which is deadly.
Yeah, and that makes me think a question I came up with for my own self as I was doing this research was, what comes after the Third Reich? You know, does that mean everything's done, it's settled? Well, no, for neo-Nazis, they still have this hankering for the Fourth Reich. And for them, this means a Western Imperium, aka a pan-Aryan world empire. So Devi and the Nazi Satanist Miguel Serrano, I believe it's pronounced, they emerged as proponents of this, what is now known as esoteric Hitlerism. Like David Ebel and other manifest sons of God-based races, Serrano said, there's nothing more mysterious than blood. The alchemist Paracelsus considered it a condensation of light. I believe that Aryan blood is not the light of a galactic sun, but the light of the black sun of the green ray. I know you have plenty to say about parts of that, John, but also I found this very interesting article, very current, June 2025 by Frank Lyons, it's L-Y-O-N-S. It's called The Coming Right-Wing Messiah, question mark. Lyons says, quote, there is the unavoidable sense of something or someone great and terrible coming. He said, quote, I am now more confident than ever before that it is coming to begin a golden age. Devi wrote that this final world leader, who she calls Kalki, will be the 10th avatar of Vishnu. He is equal parts sun and lightning, creator and destroyer. The Satanist, who we already mentioned, Devi Myat's invocation of Vindex as, quote, the Avenger, is inspired by what Devi wrote about Kalki, who comes to destroy non-Aryans.
I hate to say it, but every time that you mention the black sun, I keep thinking of the song Black Hole Sun. It's just going through my head all the time. But it's, you know, there's so many things here that my mind, when it gets overwhelmed with things that are evil, I go to my happy place, and my happy place is music. And what you're describing, this is some scary stuff. We're talking about, I'm looking through the names that I have in my list in my head of all of the New Apostolic Reformation leaders, some of which you've mentioned are openly declaring a purge, but many of them who aren't really declaring it in public, but yet they are in private. Jed Hartley, who does the podcast with me about IHOP KC, he says things on the podcast that just my jaw drops to the floor. I can't believe that these are Christian themes. And what it is, these are men and women who are taking political ideologies that are very driven towards purging out any opposition, mixing it with Christianity, and then trying to combine this and say, we need to purge the evil from this planet, not realizing, recognizing that they are part of the evil that's on this planet. And it all comes back to the idea, Sophia is supposed to come down and bring this divine unity. There's different ways that this theme comes out in mysticism. Well, if you understand how that works, it's almost a summoning of Sophia. Well, these new apostolic leaders, it's like a summoning of God instead of looking for Jesus to return. It's something they must do to forcibly call down the power of God. The two are very, very similar, but yet one is using the name Jesus and one is not using the name Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. That's why if somebody has the time to actually read the larger book I wrote, they'll see that I've divided it off into a so-called Christian version and a so-called esoteric version. And Alice Bailey is actually, sort of the epitome of that, because several points in her writing, she would refer to herself as a Christian esotericist. Oh, okay, she's both. Well, no, she's not both. She's only one of those esotericists. Okay, so I'm thinking here again, excuse the title, but I just kind of got off to being a fifth grade teacher again. Is the alt-right all right or entirely wrong? Okay, so forgive me. So I found this article by David Lawrence, 2018. It's called Hindu Mysticism and the Alt-Right. Well, that's hitting a lot of the stuff we're talking about, especially if you're talking about melting of ideas and ideas being brought into the Christian world, although on extreme peripheries. So Lawrence says that Devi's views are reaching a wider public through alt-right leaders such as Richard Spencer and Steve Bannon, Trump's former chief strategist and chair of Breitbart News. Spencer jokingly deified Trump as an incarnation of Kalki, the destroyer aspect of the god Vishnu. Spencer has also, quote, invoked Devi by saying that white people are the children of the sun. So what are brown, black, Asian, I guess not of the sun. Another very excellent thing, which I think you could still get this on YouTube, was by Maria Margaronis. It's called Savatra Devi, From the Aryans to the Alt-Right. Again, that's right on center of what we're talking about. According to this writer, she says that Devi once prayed for the Nazi victims of Nuremberg trial who were unjustly accused of war crimes against humanity. Debbie said, "Mother, dark blue mother, avenge them, avenge them, avenge them, the martyrs of Nuremberg." She followed up by saying, that's Debbie saying, "Hitler's only mistake was he was just too kind."
And ironically, in the latter Rain revivals, Branham was saying how blessed it would be if Hitler came and knocked at your door. I grew up with this. This was programmed into my head. It was supposed to be blessed if Hitler came to knock at the door. And it's just, it's unbelievable when you think about the way that evil is viewed by the leaders in this movement is not the way that a normal human being would view evil. You would usually walk away from it and say, no, I want no part of this. But they almost glorify the evil.
Yeah, John, it is astounding. There's something I hate to say, but it's sort of true. Because I've been dealing with this sort of information since, it's been about 45 years now. One of my biggest reactions at the first, you get reactions like, you just can't believe it, you know, and then another one could be fear. What if this stuff really plays out? But not that they should dissipate, but they've dissipated in a certain way. And the way that I can reconcile with my faith in Christ that they have dissipated that urgency is that you can only do what you can do. And to be faithful to Christ is not fixing the whole problem, which you won't be able to do that. And if you look at Scripture, you really won't be able to do that because it shows sort of a societal descend rather than a societal ascension, if that can be said. So since I've talked about Jane Leeds so often, the idea comes up, did she have ongoing revelations that would lead to the devil reborn? She does have some that can be seen as predecessors to racist ideas, but here's a couple of things that she wrote. According to the Latter Rain participants, Larry and Betty Hodges, Leeds, a revelation of the everlasting gospel message, that's 1697, it communicates the message that full restitution includes the fallen angels. Yes, even Lucifer himself. Now, if you looked at much writings that are talking about universal reconciliation and all things coming together and everything's going to be worked out, the logical outcome of that is that, wait a minute, what about those really negative, evil sorts of spiritual forces? And of course, if you look at a lot of good writers, Christian writers, you'll see that you can't really reconcile those two together. So here goes Lead again. She says that God has both light and darkness, good and evil, death and life, bounded up in unity and harmony. There is a colossal mistake, if you want to have give her that much, in those words. Then, to get right to the Latter Rain folks, this again is one step closer to anti-Semitic ideas and these so-called devil reborn. And I just say that it's Latter Rain prophets influenced by Jane Leeds' practice of ongoing revelation. You have George Houghton, highly influential. He says the children born of mixed couples are mongrels. He says some other stuff, but no time can get us into that right here. J. Preston Eby, another one influenced by Lee. God is both good and evil, male and female. He also said that Jesus called himself Lucifer. Very strange, but I guess it has a reason somewhere. Roel Cronquist, he taught something that a lot of racists teach, and that's about the pre-Adamic man. Bill Britton authored Lucifer, the Shining One, and he also taught that Jesus is not a Jew. David Ebal taught about the sin of usury, which is a colossal red flag, if you want to put it like that, of anti-Jewish thought. They're constantly talking about usury. Ray Prinzing said this: "We should see no evil in Satan. He is only an instrument in the hands of God." Now, he happened to be another one of those present truth, manifest sons of God-based teachers who came out of the latter rain. There you have him. Roland Plates would fit that same description, coming out of the latter rain. So Plates says, "Jesus will harmonize the two realms through himself, including all who follow Satan, to make a perfect new order."
And there you have it. That's the manifestation of the Sophia's one world order, the perfect harmony that is supposed to come down with mysticism. And ironically, the same exact thing that the NAR claims that they can do, if through militant pushing through politics and controlling governments and all of this mess that we see in Washington today, the end game is the same. They want the same so-called harmony. And look what it has caused: wars and discrimination and hate riots. This is not a good thing, but each side thinks that they're doing the work of whatever is their god or goddess.
Yeah, and that leads me to just kind of sum up, if we can do that, going back to where we began, which is Savitri Devi. Because, again, probably or highly unlikely, are you going to run into a NAR person who says, "Oh, yeah, I've studied Savitri's stuff. Oh, she's great." But what you have is you have people with sort of stepping stones, and that's what I'm thinking of, connective tissue, where you can go from the NAR and into slightly deeper teachings of maybe manifest sons of God teachers. Kevin and Barb Sisti, if you find their, they have recently set up a new podcast on YouTube, and they deal with this. It's very interesting, very powerful stuff they're going with. But it leads back to the beginning where I was talking about Vitri, and that is this convergence of taking the way, way deep stuff, slightly deep stuff, moderately deep stuff, barely deep stuff, and then having these roads or ranks, rungs on the ladder for you to follow. So I put in that is the bridge to identity Christianity is a bridge to the devil reborn. It's supported by ongoing revelations. So I found this article very fascinating. I've referenced it before, but it's by Viola Larson. It's called "Christian Identity, a So-Called Christian Religion for White Racists," 1992. She writes that since many identity adherents look for so-called new truths, they come to identity from teaching of the Manifest Sons of God ministries. That is a mouthful there, but it really, really gets down to the nitty-gritty of what I'm talking about. Because identity is an area that's receiving ideas from folks like Savitri. And so Larson also says that the identity movement can largely be traced to one man, Wesley A. Swift. Why is this significant? Because Swift stood at a crossroads between Manifest Sons of God teachings and full-blown anti-Semitic, devil-friendly, occult-inspired ideas. Now, this last quote is just, I keep on itching my head and saying, where did he pick this one up? But here's an example of Swift. He says in his teaching called The Heavenly Light, that the, quote, "mystery of law unites two opposites, one of satanic power and one of divine power, and they will come together in conjunction." Now, he might as well be writing a newsletter for Aleister Crowley when he's talking like that. I really, really don't know where he got it. I can see what it sounds like, and like I said, I have no idea really understanding where he got that.
Yeah, and oddly, I'm thinking back through the things that I believe growing up. And we were taught that the phrase that came from the Bible, the two would be so close, so to see the elected, we gave far too much power to the one, to that side that was supposed to be so close, to the extent that we believed that it would deceive the very elected. And we thought it was real power, it was kingdom power, whatever you want to call it. I use kingdom loosely there because John Wimber said that these people who are clearly devils, wolves in sheep's clothing, who are preying upon people, he says that they're having the real thing because they're tapping into that kingdom power. And that's the exact thing we're talking about here. It's the convergence of good and evil. And some of the leaders in the movement have claimed for many years that when you mix those two, it's okay because there's still some good mixed in with it. And I always go back to the fact that if I were serving my kids a birthday cake and somebody told me they put just a little bit of cyanide in one corner, you can eat the rest, but that corner, I'm like, no, I'm not going to let my kids eat that. And exactly. That's what we have here. So thank you so much for doing this.
No problem, John. Enjoyed it.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion from Christian Identity to the NAR. And for more about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book, The Converging Apostasy, and also a quick outline on hands-on eschatology, a matter of timing and agency.